This is the first episode of China Business Cast, brought to you by Dan Wei. I'm your host, Robert Ness. The goal of this podcast is to bring you insights into doing business in China from people on the field. We're going to start off big with one of the biggest names in China and the world, Lenovo. Lenovo makes computer hardware and mobile phone technology. It is one of the most respected domestic brands in China, and after the company acquired IBM's personal computer division, the company became a global contender. In this episode, I talked to executive assistant Corey Grenier and design engineer Russell Haynes. Let's get started.
Hello, my name is Corey Grenier. I'm an executive assistant at Lenovo Group. I've been employed here in China for about a year and a half since the acquisition of the IBM PCD. And here's my good colleague, Russell Haynes.
Thanks, Corey. my name is Russell. I've been at Lenovo for almost exactly a year. I came over from New Zealand to join the IDC, the Innovation Design Center, to work on the consumer desktop team straight after the acquisition. And
so tell me about your experience prior to coming to Lenovo.
I held a lot of different positions in the retail market and management positions, and this is actually the first job working in the IT industry.
I finished university in New Zealand. For 1 year after that, I worked on, I started up a small design consultancy and basically tried to pay off some of my student loan. And then I got the job offer in China, and the rest is history, I suppose, and I came promptly.
Tell me about your role at Lenovo. Tell me about what you do there.
I suppose primarily I'm a product designer, so I design the appearance or the outside of our hardware. So in my case, it's the computer desktops for the consumer market. All the products I've done so far have been primarily for the Chinese market, but now we're starting to obviously penetrate the international scene, so England, UK, America, Spain, Italy, etc. So yeah, that's the next focus for me.
Well, as I stated earlier, I'm an executive assistant to the Vice President of China Infrastructure. And China Infrastructure entails all the supporting functions of Lenovo's business in China. It's a pretty comprehensive role, which includes the HR services, government relations, administration, and actually many other departments, such as Huiyang Manufacturing Plant. My role, as I was hired, I was told, and I think this is pretty much across the board in China, is that the role is only what you make of it. The job titles don't mean that much. I think it's more of a starting point, just like a contract in China. And that's what they told me when I came on board, and that has been true. Since I've worked for Lenovo, I've written speeches, I've helped draft the Expatriate Assistance Program, I've helped redesign the Global Supply Chain website, because they really thought that my Western point of view could help internationalize a lot of the different areas of the company. So there are a few areas across HR and government relations and even IT that I haven't contributed some kind of input. So that's the main roles that I have.
Okay, so Corey, some big changes were happening at Lenovo when you first came in here. Can you talk about that?
Well, I joined Lenovo a week after the acquisition of the IBM PCD, and there was really no infrastructure to support the global changes on the China platform. Everything was being built every day, every hour. So what do I mean by that? I mean that the IT systems are, you had the Lenovo China IT system, and you had the heritage IBM PCD systems. So both running on two different systems. So engineers are working day and night trying to integrate those two systems into a single global platform. You had different teams, both physical environment, the virtual environment, and in a lot of ways, a cultural environment. So we had to integrate both of those areas into one cohesive unit. And a lot of times after an acquisition, I think the company focuses on the post-merger integration of the culture and not enough on the operations. So Lenovo, during the first year, under Steve Ward, who had 28 years experience with the IBM PCD, really focused on the culture, really integrated across the company. You had language contests, all these different tools and strategies to integrate both the teams. And after that, we got somebody from Dell, Bill Emilio, with 18 years at IBM, worked for Honeywell, Allied Signal, 5 years at Dell in operations at Asia Pacific. and he's the guy to execute the operations, to not only integrate but execute, and so that's what we're trying to do. You also had a situation where the IBM PCD had been losing money, and Lenovo China has 35% market share and has been very, very profitable for the market leader in China for 9 years. So the hard part is trying to make that kind of winning strategy be transferable globally, and that's the challenge, and it's a big challenge to do.
Okay, so from an innovation and design perspective, how has the transition affected the company?
Lenovo's, I suppose, quite interesting as far as Chinese companies go, because firstly, we spend twice as much as any other company on R&D, so design is a very strong element in our business. IBM has always been, I suppose, industry standard as far as commercial computers go, and Lenovo's consumer brand has always been very strong, having more than 30% market share, I think, in China, which is pretty cool. So basically, the main focus was to merge the Think brand of IBM with Lenovo's consumer brand, but keep them the two markets separate. So basically, use the strengths of IBM and maximize those. So a lot of work was done, and we have a lot of workshops with the IBM teams, so a lot of discussion, a lot of just sharing of ideas, and they still play, the major role in the Think brand. It's quite a give and take kind of thing. Like everyone works really well, I think. Like there's some kind of maybe small tensions, but everyone understands it's for the benefit of both parties.
Now, how does a Chinese company, a company that's been Chinese essentially from its origins, become a multinational company? Tell me about the process and the kind of pain of that transition.
How do you make a Chinese company think global? Well, I think they did a great job by taking on three global investors, such as Texas Pacific Group from America, that sat on the board and really mentored the company. Secondly, IBM maintained almost a 15% share in Lenovo. So they have a stake in Lenovo's long-term future. The third point is 9 out of 15 managers of senior management are foreign employees from all over the world. So we really have a diversified, global, multicultural management board that brings that kind of experience. So globalized management with that degree of multicultural thinking, I think, is key.
Do you like China?
It was exciting because you come on board and you think that it's going to be this kind of a smooth transition thing, that things that you take for granted in other organizations weren't really set up. To illustrate that on my personal level, from my contract was in Chinese, my computer was in Chinese, everything was in strictly Chinese, and so that was the first barrier. But again, you can't complain too much because you put yourself in that situation. You came to China, and that's what would be expected. But that's part of the reason that you're here. And one of the things people always say, well, why did you put yourself in that situation? Why do expatriates put themselves in that situation? But I really realized that former IBM and the parent IBM executives, some with 31 years of experience, chose to leave their position at the parent IBM and join Lenovo to be dominant, you know, executives, country managers, and other positions that they didn't have before, to have that kind of empowerment. And that was a real opportunity that was presented as a direct result of this acquisition. They did that for opportunity, and I think that any individual that comes to work in China has come here for that opportunity.
Can you teach me English?
So you're illustrating the expat experience. On the other end of the spectrum, Chinese employee there, what kind of challenges are they facing in a transition?
That's a very good question. A lot of people are under pressure to learn English, and there's the pressure put upon them is very, very high. Because it's a multinational company and English is the dominant language, I mean, every client who comes from Europe, even Africa, South America, they can communicate in English quite well with their suppliers, their partners, other IT companies. And so the management structure of Lenovo, with our headquarters being based in New York and soon to be based in North Carolina, they feel that they will never be in a senior position unless they can communicate with those managers in English. And it's true. On that one aspect, it is true if they are aspiring to be a senior vice president, because how can they convey their great idea if they can't express themselves in English?
Okay, so Lenovo has a blend of Chinese and American leadership. Now, what can other companies learn from Lenovo in terms of blending Chinese and Western management styles to manage essentially Chinese employees?
Well, I think it's difficult because the Chinese society doesn't want to be rude. And, you know, you see that throughout China, that in discussions they will always concur when they really might not mean it or will actually do something completely different. And to emphasize that, Steve Woods, our first CEO after the acquisition, stated, one of the challenges is to make the Americans say less and to make the Chinese be rude. And he didn't maybe literally mean be rude, but he meant they need to speak up and they need to have that platform to express themselves more often. So that's a challenge, is trying to actually get as much input from the Chinese side as you will undoubtedly get from the IBM side, who has been global for nearly three decades. Lenovo is doing a good job. They are merging the two different cultures and the two different management styles pretty effectively. Of course, as far as I can see, I'm a little biased towards the Chinese side because I work within the Chinese management day in, day out, and for the past year. But I am also very impressed by the IBM style of management when they come and visit. And you can always tell a long-time veteran IBMer because they almost speak more like a psychologist than a manager. They very analytical, very quality-focused. They want to know a lot about the process. The Chinese, they too have a very strong track record and a strong vision to follow it. It's a thing that I think is great about Lenovo is the long-term vision of the company. And maybe it's an Asian trait, but I would say that having the short-term gains of American style and the long-term vision of the Asian style, I think that's it's a very strong combination. And if utilized, and only the future can tell, it could put Lenovo to be the number one company by 2010, which is the chairman's objective.
Does IBM's management techniques, are they taking effect at Lenovo? Or are Lenovo's employees, are they accepting of it? Or are they welcoming it?
Asia has always embraced a very strong leadership model. And one of the reasons that Bill Amelio has been accepted so well, I think, within the company is because he is a very strong leader. There's no question about his ability to be a strong leader. He's come out forcefully with an agenda, which is mainly to cut costs and push innovation, which is one of the things that Russell's working on. And I think the Chinese appreciate that. You have to realize we have a dual model, basically, of management at the most senior position. Our chairman is Chinese with that long-term vision. And then you have a CEO with the Western style who's going to be focusing on quarterly short-term gains and executing the short-term objectives of the company at a very quick and rapid pace. So I think it's a very good model.
Listen to me. I have an idea.
Corey, you talked about how one of your CEOs said, get the Americans to say less and Chinese to be rude. Now, I mean, this is talking about getting people to speak up. Now, how prone are your coworkers to being creative and, you know, contributing ideas? And should foreign managers see this as a challenge?
Well, I don't think that creating ideas or bringing forth ideas is the problem. I think that the setting of where coworkers are eager to bring forth those ideas is more of an obstacle. For instance, if there's a manager in the room and they feel that their expression may, embarrass the manager, or, you know, of course everyone's going to say lose face, they may not express themselves as forthrightly as they would want to and as much explanation as they want to, and I think that can be a real barrier. Now, I remember one time, the first month I worked at Lenovo, I was in a conference call, and they asked me to sit in the conference call and help them write down, take notes, because the Americans would speak so fast on the other end. And then at the end, we were going to discuss you know, what exactly was said. The line was so bad, and you could barely make out what was being said. That was the first problem. The second problem was the woman spoke so fast that I could barely understand her, and she used a lot of American slang that was very hard to understand if you were not a native English speaker. And the first question, can you hear me okay? The Chinese side said, yes. Do you understand? Every time, yes. There were times I couldn't understand. And at the end of that phone conference call, I was pretty sure that no one understood what had happened. And we hung up the phone, and after saying, yes, I understand, yes, 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 after that, they're like, okay, so what was said, Corey? Or what happened? And it became clear to me that they were just trying to be polite. No one wanted to tell that woman, we don't understand you. You're speaking too fast. They thought that may be rude. Or you're using language that we can't really understand. Can you use simpler language? But no one wanted to be rude or lose face or seem like they didn't know what was going on. So that was a simple example of some of the cultural problems that first happened. A case that happened with me is I live in the employee housing, and I have Lenovo employees on each side of my wall, and I was doing a lot of DIY construction work, and I would say, I asked my neighbors, do I make noise? I said, no, I don't make, you don't make any noise. I go, come on, tell me, no noise at all. And I go, listen, don't be Chinese with me. But I'm American, pretend like you're an American. I want the full answer. Am I making noise? And they go, sometimes. So we got down to the truth of it. So what are the key challenges of trying to make Chinese employees express themselves and an environment and a culture that really hasn't promoted self-expression as highly as we do in the West? Of course, again, you have to look at the cultural context of the situation. You cannot just come in and say, okay, this works in the West, this kind of style, so everybody just debate, express yourselves, and expect everybody to do that. I think you're going to have to take a different tack, and you're going to maybe even identify the differences before you even have the meeting. One of the things that Lenovo has done is try, and a lot of times has succeeded, in creating a corporate culture where people are free to express those ideas. And of course, IBM has a very strong corporate culture where people can express ideas, hotly debate. In some departments within Lenovo, expressing yourself and debate is highly encouraged. This is the R&D center where Russell Haynes works in. And that's because his manager is a real advocate of self-expression, and he's studied, in some ways perfected, the art of creative collaboration. And kind of the everything from the rapid prototyping to the sharing of ideas to brainstorming that a lot of the key design firms and most innovative firms in the world have used. And he's really done a great job. One of those reasons is because Lenovo's actually hired some of those companies to come in and share their experiences and then adapted those as their own. But I would say that when you look at the designs, and that's my favorite part of the whole company, the Chinese have a lot of great ideas. And anyone that visits our Innovation Design Center is going to be very impressed by the wealth of creative designs that are there.
Give me an example of the unexpected challenges you faced in working with Chinese coworkers.
Like Corey mentioned, the language barrier, that was the initial shock. Well, not a shock, but, you know, I suppose the reality of the situation is you have to communicate. So I strongly recommend to anyone learning some Chinese, even a little bit, it goes a long way. Maybe not so much as gaining the ability to communicate, but showing a sense of, like, goodwill. And the Chinese really appreciate, I suppose, an effort being made to understand their culture or their language. So then they're more receptive to basically, speaking English, or they'll make more of an effort. So the language barrier, that was interesting. The Chinese work ethic is very strong, and they really are prepared to put themselves on the line for their job. You know, like that, they make, you know, very big sacrifices in regards to, you know, personal time, maybe even relationships, just to, because the company comes first. Basically, your well-being doesn't come second, but it's maybe your well-being is aligned with the company's well-being. So long hours became a fact of life. So 80-hour weeks were, you know, common. You know, no big deal. I suppose also the Chinese, as far as design goes, are technically, they're very efficient. So the speed they can put a product to market is, I don't think anyone can match that. So basically, for me being a designer, I had to learn how to work twice as fast. And I think that's one of the things in China is being able to get something to market, or, you know, realizing a niche and being able to capitalize on it within 4 months or 5 months to make the most of the situation. So that's a new skill I've learned.
So your department is a design department. Tell me what it's like working with Chinese designers. How do they think about creativity? How do they approach a design product?
One thing I suppose I've learned is in China it's very important to create value or perceived value within a product. So maybe as opposed to some European ways of thinking as far as design, it's so functionalism and just the essential design elements. Sometimes you have to jeopardize those to basically present your product as something which may be worth more than it is. So basically putting across perceived a higher value than what the product really is, maybe. At first that was a little bit hard to come to grips with, but really as a designer your job is to add value to a product, and if that's what you have to do to sell and to get basically a market edge, then that's what you have to do. And yeah, I think it's maybe a skill which is not exclusive to Chinese companies, obviously, but it's a very competitive market over here in the technology sector, so basically any edge you can get, is you have to get it, really. We recently did a project, a PI project, which is basically the future direction for Lenovo, like the future direction for our design language, because we're expanding internationally and we need to basically establish an international design language which works well in China, but also say in Europe, say England, the US, Italy, France, Germany. A good example is texture, which I often had trouble. So you're applying texture or sort of 3D, you know, surfacing to elements which maybe don't necessarily need them, say the base of a keyboard or something, and the texture basically has zero cost as far as production goes, but the perceived value is it basically increases the perceived value because there's obviously more detail, more, it appears more thought has gone into the product, it appears more luxurious, and as to the bling is an American term, but I think bling has more buying power, more purchase power than it would in America, I think, here in China.
A manager called another manager and asked that somebody come the following day present to this international visitor, a CIO, actually one of the top 10 CIOs in the whole world. And I was asked to review this presentation, and I reviewed the presentation, and it did not meet the requirements. It was strictly only talking about what the department does, what the department itself does as a function. We really needed a case study. And I asked that person, this does not meet the requirements. I do not want you to present tomorrow. And she said, yes, I won't present. I said, do you understand? She said, yes. I said, you know, I appreciate your work, but this really isn't it. So tomorrow, we'll just leave this segment out. She said, okay, I understand. I said, okay, thank you. The next morning, she was there presenting. She had arrived 10 minutes early, and it was a shock. And this multinational visitors that were there were shocked at the show. They didn't understand what was going on. And the person's English was bad. The presentation was bad. It was a disaster. And actually, the vice president who was with me stopped, interrupted, and said, you know, handed out business cards and put that to an end. And later, there was a big follow-up investigation of what went wrong. And so we asked that girl, why did you do this? You said that you understood. So yeah, I said that. I understood. But my boss had asked me to do something, and I had to do it. And that really drove home the point where, in the Chinese culture, it might be rude or impolite to tell you, no, I understand you, but I'm not going to listen to you. And that's exactly what happened. My advice to anybody operating in China is to realize that it's the loyalty to their boss, the dedication, the sense of duty, that they have to fulfill what they were asked to do. And if somebody's coming from outside their direct reporting chain, it might not hold any value. And they might tell you they will listen to you or they'll obey you, and they might do exactly the opposite. And I wouldn't be shocked by that. I would come with some kind of preparation and be forewarned that can occur.
Well, it's very un-Chinese to brag, right? Do you think so, Robert?
Bragging in China?
Yeah. It's not really done.
Not directly, no, yeah.
Unless you're Yao Ming or that track star.
Does he brag? He seems humble.
We brag about him.
Well, we brag about him, yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens in the Olympics, see who's bragging, huh? But I think that it's a little unfair to always look at the challenges and the obstacles. I would say some of the strengths. And it's always harder to focus on the strengths because it's easier to look at the weaknesses. For instance, I want to take my boss. My boss was educated, did his master's at Tsinghua University, and some of the experiences that he had to go through were the tumultuous times in the late 90s, and also the almost equally tumultuous times in the PC industry, technology industry as a whole throughout China, with the smuggling, the pirated operating systems, and really trying to establish a company with a good system of ethics. And Lenovo was able to do that. And that is unique to any company in China, a country roughly the size of the United States, you know, 1.5 billion people, all the statistics that everybody knows. But here's a company that has, you know, set up a value system, acquired a Western company, after Hurricane Katrina, donated 600 PCs to the victims. So you have a Chinese company actually giving international aid. This is unique. This hasn't really happened. Some of the social systems and policies of Lenovo may be small compared to long-established PC companies and other companies, but you really have to look at that environment that Lenovo has come from, and that's what makes it even more impressive. And also, that is why the future for Lenovo looks so bright, because here where a lot of companies have really enjoyed the strong education systems, the strong government systems, the strong infrastructure, and all these mature technology markets, and Lenovo's never had any of that. And so these managers, they are telling their thoughts, and there may not be as much debate as we would have in the US or in Europe, but they're still expressing themselves. And the manager is analyzing them on a case-by-case basis, and that manager will make the end decision, and I've seen that. And not only that, I think that the Chinese manager has a very clear understanding of what's being said. My boss can take a huge discussion on any topic that's being told to him, and he always does the same system. He breaks it down into parts, simple parts. Like, he'll go, so what you're saying is this, and he will name maybe four key parts. And equally, when he gives a directive, he says, I want you to do A, B, and C. And each one of those are really the meat of the situation. And that's kind of what you see in strong management, is being able to assess a situation, deduce it into simple actions. People say, you know, small words, big ideas. And I think that's what the Chinese management that I've seen is very good at. And one former IBM person, I said, hey, how do you like working for Lenovo in China? And this is Lenovo heritage IBM employee. He said, in IBM, it took us 3 months to make a decision to move a facility. In Lenovo, we did it, the decision, the action, and the move in 2 weeks. And it's that kind of execution that is going to set this company apart. So there's a lot of stories and a lot of things to be learned. But a key thing is that you can't underestimate the strong management ability of the Chinese executives and the ability of Lenovo.
That's it for Dan Wei's first episode of China Business Cast. I hope you enjoyed it. We're going to have this podcast out to you in regular intervals, so please stay tuned. I'm your host, Robert Ness. Please leave your comments and recommendations on who to interview on the Dan Wei blog or email me at robert@danwei.org. Thanks for listening.